That jail.
Oh. Our jail, yes.
Okay, when are we going to bulldoze that?
I would like to do that tomorrow.
Okay.
But there are a few things standing in my way. The
not
day.
Me. I'm not standing
I know,
in my way.
I know. The day we. What is that big wrecking ball?
Yeah.
Miley Cyrus's wrecking ball?
Yeah. It's going to be that specific. The famous one? We're going to use to destroy that?
The day, or I don't know if we're going to, can you, I'm thinking of all the ways to get rid of this building.
You can implode it?
You can implode it.
I think they would do that rather than swing a wrecking ball.
Okay.
That's pretty old fashioned.
Okay. The day we implode that building will be a very happy day in Oklahoma County.
I agree.
Now, that will be a long way away because you have to build a new facility before you destroy the old one.
Here's what I want is for the new facility to be A, much smaller.
Yes.
Or not have one at all. Two, for whatever takes the place to be pretty much in the same place. I really, it's important to me, to the people I've served in the past several years, to the people that I will serve in the future, that we don't build that out somewhere where we don't have to look at it, where we don't have to encounter the fact that we're locking people in the cages.
That's very true.
And when we discharge people at 4 a.m. that they're not out in the hinterlands at like 172nd and what, Kelly or something. Well, that's not where it would be. People who live out there would not allow that. But, you know, Coltrane, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
I highly doubt we would put it that far away, mostly because our law enforcement wants it to remain close to downtown, if not in downtown.
Good. Can we put it in Scissortail Park?
I think Mayor Holt might have an issue with that.
Well, he can take that up with me.
Okay.
He's not here today.
Okay.
I'm going to have him on here one day. That's going to be so great.
Oh, my God.
It'll be really great.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah, he is. Can I be on it with him, or does it have to be just him?
I haven't thought about that. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
Okay.
You're going to be a recurring guest on this show.
I'm not getting paid to do this, everyone.
No, she's not. She's not. The only payment I'm making is not openly talking any shit on anybody that she works with.
Yeah.
That's my main thing.
Yeah.
Closest I came was saying how devout a couple of people were. That's not talking shit.
No.
If what they believe is true, then I paid them a high compliment.
Yeah.
So anyway, this week we got to, attend the Zero Mental Health Symposium presented by the Mental Health Association of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I was there all week, which is why I had to watch your meeting on Wednesday.
Was that your first time at the Zero Symposium?
That's my third time at the symposium.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I actually presented at it a couple of years ago.
What'd you present?
I presented about street papers.
Cool.
We had a really corny name for it. It said Street Papers. Solving homelessness one issue at a time.
Oh, bada bing. I presented.
I came to your presentation.
Yeah, like two years ago.
It was last year.
It was about last year. It was about open streets.
Yeah, I attended your presentation on open streets last year. You were supposed to have a co-presenter, and they weren't able to make
it. Yeah, so just the morning of, I found out it's just you.
And so you know what Commissioner Blumert did to cover for the fact that she was not prepared to take up the whole time? She opened with a little bit of seated yoga instruction.
I did. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
I didn't forget about it because people loved it because it was the second day of the symposium.
Yeah.
And maybe the second breakout of the day.
Yeah.
So we had already been to a keynote and a long session. And then you were like, you know, we've all been sitting in these chairs listening. I'm a yoga instructor. Let me just walk you through just a little technique to kind of loosen up your shoulders and neck. And you like took up about like 10, 15 minutes at the top with that and then talked about open streets. So I was like, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Like that's,
you gotta know what tools are in your toolbox and you gotta know when to pull them out.
You gotta know when to fold them. You gotta know when to hold them.
Yeah.
You gotta know when to walk away.
Yeah.
But also, buddy, you gotta know when to run.
Yeah.
There are a lot more rules too, but I'm not a big fan of rules. So let's talk about the symposium this year. I will say that you had to miss the second day.
I missed the second day, but the first day, Can I talk about what I liked about the first day?
Please do. Yeah. Let's talk about Esme Wajun Wing. She was so good.
I started reading her book this morning, The Collected Schizophrenias.
Nice.
I am now officially obsessed with her. Mm-hmm. I think she is so brilliant. I think she has a Twitter, she has an Instagram, and she has several books that she's written. So she is she Chinese American? Was she born in the United States?
She was born in the U.S., I believe.
First generation Chinese American?
First generation.
Young, like probably 30s.
I'm not sure.
And she's been diagnosed with schizoaffective bipolar type, I think is her exact diagnosis. Yeah. She was diagnosed with bipolar for many, many years, and her psychiatrist was hesitant to diagnose her with schizoaffective.
Correct. That's pretty common, really, because people, schizotypal diagnoses in general have a tendency, well, they're so highly stigmatized for one thing, but also they have a tendency to render one presumed disabled, right? And that's why psychiatrists are sometimes kind of hesitant to give that diagnosis.
Yeah. In the general sense, saying I have bipolar is a lot less scary and stigmatized than saying I have schizophrenia or I have schizoaffective.
Right.
So anyway, she got up and shared her story of being diagnosed and her family history. And she's an incredible writer. And she was so calm. Like I felt like I could listen to her all day.
Yeah.
And she's this small little person, and you can tell she like cares so much about debunking stigma, mm-hmm. and she's lived it herself. And I was like mesmerized by her. And so the funny thing was that on the way into her session, I stopped at the Magic City Books table, uh-huh. and I saw her book, and I'd never heard of her. And I pointed to it, and I said to the guy working at the table, "Oh, this looks good." And he goes, "You need to walk into the ballroom. She's talking right now."
Oh, wow.
I was like, "Oh,
I better hurry
let
up.
Me buy this book and run in there." So she, I tweeted at her, and I'm waiting for a reply.
Yeah, she retweeted me that day. But
what?
Well, I was tweeting, listener, if you you probably saw this, but throughout the symposium, I was live tweeting from the Tulsa Voice Twitter account, and I tweeted a thread of her presentation. And somebody retweeted it and tagged her. And then she retweeted it and said, "Here's a thread of my talk from the Zero Symposium this morning."
Oh, cool.
So that was neat.
Say her name again.
Esme Wajun Wang.
Okay.
She was just really inspiring. I mean, like, I and a number of other people got up afterward, mm-hmm. and less of a question, more of a statement of like, "Thank you. I've had this experience. And thank you for destigmatizing that."
She explained what it was like to have her hallucinations, but she called them something else.
They were
sensory oddities.
Sensory oddities is what her psychiatrist called them when she was hesitant to give her that diagnosis.
So she describes what it's like to experience those and to hear those things, and how and maybe you can speak to this. You're living in this world of, I know that this isn't necessarily real, but I can't help but react to it.
Exactly right. Like when I hear things, I know they're not, well, I don't always know they're not real. If I'm in public, it's why you see me with headphones in so much more frequently these days, because I've been more symptomatic recently, and that's why the TV is always on if I'm at home, or music or something loud is going on, because I will hear stuff and I know it's not real, but it really just diminishes my quality of life. Yeah. I would say more so visual hallucinations, like, mine aren't as severe as what she was describing, but she said that one thing she was seeing was like corpses in cars. And she said, "You can pretend like you don't see that, but a hole in the earth opening before you while you're walking down a sidewalk, it's impossible. Your brain just reacts to
you
that.
Naturally
and you
jump,
you know?" And I would say when I have that experience, when I see somebody out of the corner of my eye coming at me, and that's not, you know, I'm going to turn and look and it's not there. And I realize it's not like there are other types of hallucinations that people with schizotypal diagnoses experience where their perception of reality is really skewed, where it's more like, I think you are all robots or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And that's not what she's describing. That's certainly not what my experience has been. But yeah, there, your lizard brain just reacts to stimulus, right?
Yeah.
So you see a hole opening in front of you and you're like, okay, that got me again. I know that's not real, but,
but the more I told organizers of the conference, I said to have someone with severe mental illness be the opening keynote to me was so important for destigmatizing mental illness, because oftentimes at those conferences, the keynote will be a researcher or a very well-known psychiatrist or someone who has dedicated their professional life to studying and understanding mental illness. And she is a person living with mental illness.
Right.
And I thought that was so important to have her be the opening keynote. Yeah.
And also I want to throw in just the fact that she is a scientist, you know,
she has her, and then she has her master's in arts in
letters, I believe.
Yeah.
She was really something.
Yeah.
What else you get out of that first day? There were a lot of breakouts. I know that we weren't in all of the same ones. So
the morning breakout, I went to one about a program kind of similar to Remerge, for women who are facing prison time. No, I went to one called, Just the Beginning.
Oh.
Or the name of the program is Just the Beginning.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Empowerment for Justice Involved Women.
Yes. So it's in Tulsa County, and it's a little different than Remerge in that they will accept women with higher level charges as long as the judge allows them into the program.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Remerge, you have to have a specific type of charges.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't have more violent charges to get into Remerge.
Right.
This program, if the judge allows them, they get accepted into this program.
Dope.
And it's very similar. They provide them, they help them find housing. They are in different types of classes, and they help them they represent them at court. Like someone from the program will go with them to court. But they said they have a 95% success rate.
That's incredible.
That's
incredible.
That was one of the sessions I went to.
Let me ask you, this phrase, this is the buzzword now, like the term of art now is justice involved.
Yes.
That crawls all over me.
Oh, tell me why.
I don't think it has anything to do with justice. It's like calling the jail trust the criminal justice authority.
Yeah.
They're not authorities on criminal justice.
Yeah.
Maybe Francie Aquariquu is, because she fights for the rights of people who are being prosecuted.
Yeah, who are in the jail.
But I don't like justice involved. I think it's better than saying inmates, you know,
or
criminals. But
I try not to use the word inmate.
Yeah, no, guests, right? Like we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I will go out of my way to say persons who are incarcerated or persons who have been incarcerated, but it's so...
Residents.
I
try to use the word resident.
Residents at the jail, residents at the detention center. I just, like speaking with Nicole McAfee, like she prefers the term criminal legal system rather than criminal justice system.
Yeah.
And I like that quite a bit. And so I would say, women involved in...
The legal system
is what I usually say. People involved in the legal system.
Yeah.
Because I think nobody thinks I'm talking about getting divorced. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yes.
What we're talking about is that they've been accused of a crime or being tried or waiting for trial or have been sentenced with some crime.
What sessions did you go to?
I went to Breaking Down Barriers. Homeless to Housed was the name of that. Their presentation. It was Noe Rodriguez, lately of the Mental Health Association. He was their, like their outreach triage guy. He was on the street every day around Tulsa, building relationships and rapport with people. And he was doing this before he was with them, with John 3:16, and just without resources. And they were like, hey, come work for us. We have the resources.
Wow.
He just moved over to their day shelter.
Okay.
In Tulsa. It's a sad loss for Mental Health Association to have him go, but that's a great thing for him and the day shelter there. And then Ashley Gunnels from Mental Health Association, she works on housing stuff with them too. And then Katie Dayenhoff, who's with Pause for Pause. They basically they board companion animals while somebody's trying to get housed, and they try to help with those issues.
Nice.
But Yeah, that was a good presentation. We talked quite a bit, and I brought up, I'm going to bring this up, and I want, I don't want to get you in a corner where you have to agree or disagree with anything I say. Obviously, my opinions are my own. As I said in the last episode of this podcast, you have your own shitty opinions that people can get mad at you for and hold you accountable for. They don't need to be mad at you for my bad opinions.
Yes, exactly.
Same for, anyway, same for a number of other politicians locally, but CIT officers came up, and it came up several times in the course of that. And I'm just, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
But man, the last person that I think I should call when somebody's having a mental health crisis is a cop in a uniform with a gun on his head.
Yes.
Like, I don't care if they really, like, they came into the police force wanting to be a CIT officer. Like, they're a cop in a uniform. Like, it's the wildest thing. I can understand a CIT trained professional being maybe accompanied at night by a police officer just for the sake of safety concerns or whatever. But that came up quite a bit over the course of the whole weekend, like CIT training officers.
Yeah.
Something I only learned recently is that it's voluntary to be a CIT officer. And at first I was like, well, it doesn't, I don't like that. And then I think Chief Gorley actually was the first person I heard say, the reason it's voluntary is that if you don't care about doing that, that's the last person you want to show up for a crisis call, somebody who doesn't care.
Yeah, that's what he said to me as well. Because for a while, I thought every single officer should be CIT trained. Mm-hmm. Ideally, so when you're in crisis, most people's, the number they know is 911.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've trained you to know to call. And on the other end of 911 is either a police officer or an ambulance or a fire truck, or sometimes all three. But we really haven't created a good response system for mental health, a mental health crisis, in the sense that exactly what you're saying, a police officer shows up to respond to your call.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some police officers are very good at responding to mental health crisis calls. Some are not. I have started looking into how other communities respond to mental health crisis calls. I think Philadelphia sends, they do not send a police officer. They send an ambulance.
Mm.
So it's paramedics that show up who are trained. I have looked into a county in Nevada where they have social workers who they do not practice their social work in an office. Their 100% of their work time is with a police officer or out on the street.
Yeah.
And so they are the ones that respond to those crisis calls, and the police officer just accompanies them.
Gotcha.
So ideally, that's what I would like Oklahoma County to get to, because the story that Counselor Hammond said, I think on the day they voted on maps, of a man who was in crisis, they called the cops. He was put in the back of a car, and
they beat the shit out of him. Yeah. I mean, I'll say what she won't, because he was my client. Like, that was my friend. He did exactly what he was supposed to, and he went to the crisis center, but he drank on his way, and so they wouldn't admit him. And they called the cops, and a cop who was CIT trained beat the shit out of him, and they put him in restraints. They don't hog tie, but it's all but hog tied. Yeah. And then they put a spit guard over his mouth, and they really roughed him up and threw him in the back of the police car, hit his head on everything. And, and he got 4 years in prison. And he had to sit, let me throw this in. He had to sit in that jail, that hellhole, from June 13th to April 15th, just to wait to get that 4 year prison sentence.
And that is all a result of, not all a result, but a huge factor was the police officers not understanding that they're trying to punish that man's mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so now he's spending 4 years for doing something that was a result of his untreated mental illness, he was calling to get help for.
Yeah. And I might get really emotional about that, because I've known him for a long time. And this man was homeless for 22 years. He was homeless since he was a 16-year-old kid. He's been failed by the system so many times. And so maybe I got a chip on my shoulder by CIT officers because of this specific dumb. I mean, this cop was an idiot. Like, I was in court with him, and the defense attorney was like, so is part of your CIT training to put 4-point restraints on somebody in a crisis? No, that's not part of our training. Okay, but throwing them in the, putting a spit guard over the face of somebody who's having a mental health crisis, is that part of CIT training? Oh, no, that's not.
Nope.
Physically throwing them in the backseat. No, nope. It's not all of this. And he was just like it didn't occur to him. Like it just never occurred to him.
Wow.
And I've heard, you know, scuttlebutt from other public defenders that even the prosecutors hate having that specific police officer testify because he's an idiot.
Wow.
They need to take that emblem off of his collar and stop calling him when there's a crisis call. And I'll fist fight him in heaven.
Okay.
Over this. Anyway, nobody trip over my soapbox. I realize that I have some pretty strong feelings about that. What else did you see that, I don't want to keep you all day. So I want to just hit some highlights here, like some things that you really enjoyed and really got something out of. Well, we were talking about incarceration of women.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the launch keynote that day.
Yeah. So I was on a call, so I missed the first few minutes. That's so right. I didn't get to hear her introduce herself. But she does quite a bit of work in women's prisons.
Mm-hmm.
And her view is that if we have limited resources, we should focus them on the most the highest need population, which are women who are in high security prisons. So she created kind of this one image stuck in my head that she showed of these women in a, was it a max security facility?
It was a maximum security. They had, you couldn't see it in the photograph, but they never got their chains off.
Yeah.
They were brought in chained together and there were, shooters, armed guards on the skywalk around them in case any of them got out of line.
And she pushed back pretty hard and basically said, I want to bring in this program. I can't even really remember what the program was about.
It was a curriculum that she's developed for addressing trauma as a root cause of, she talked a lot about ACEs. Everybody's talking about ACEs these days, which is great because it's super informative. That's adverse childhood experiences for the listener. If you're not familiar, please Google it. ACEs, just like it's spelled, adverse childhood experiences. It's a questionnaire. It's a 10-point scale. And it can really show us a lot about where people are because of where they've been in their youth and the traumas that we've experienced. Because if you are traumatized, you are likely to incur more trauma as your life passes. And unfortunately, sometimes that means that you have a higher likelihood of creating trauma as well.
Or having chronic disease.
Having chronic illness is definitely, and it's unhealthy for a community.
Yeah.
And like these problems go pretty wide. So she's developed a curriculum she developed it for women. She started with kids, actually, with girls and to address trauma earlier in life. And she's taken this to prisons. She's done with women and men in max security prisons and had great results.
And she, one of the pictures shows these women sitting at desks and then there's a facilitator up front, but you can't really see, but they're chained to their desks and their desks are like chained to the floor. And there are these kind of cubicle walls in between each desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she tried really hard to get these women to be able to sit at a desk without a guard next to them, to participate in a program in a classroom as any other woman would, but these women happened to be in a high security prison. And she wanted to do this program and make it feel as normal as possible.
Right.
I think many other people would have been turned away and said, oh, you,
these are too far gone.
Yeah.
What's the point? They're never getting out of here anyway.
Yeah.
Dr. Covington, is her name's, Stephanie Covington.
She also talked a lot about creating gender-specific curriculum and how we've created gender-specific curriculum for men, and we say, oh, this will work for women.
Right.
And then we create gender-specific curriculum for women, and we try to bring it to a male population, and they say, no, that was created for women.
Right. It's quite the opposite of what would be effective.
Yeah.
Like, if you're wanting to see things that are created for men, I would urge you to check out every aspect of the culture. That's what was created for men. So creating something for women, for a specific group, can really translate to other groups. Now, I would say one sort of blank spot almost in her. She would bring it up almost like, you know, people are still learning. And she's very much reflective of 60s and 70s white feminism. Like, she even used some old language. Like, she used the word transsexual, which blew my mind. Like, I was really like, whoa, that's some old school talk. But she would say stuff about, like, the two genders, men and women. And then she'd say, and, you know, transgender and gender nonconforming or non-binary. You know, it's like she's learning. And that's got to be different for doing, you know, somebody who's been collecting data for 40 years and, like, all of a sudden it's part of the conversation in a way that it never was when she was coming up. And but she's, you know, she's got some really good stuff. Something that struck both of us, because we actually got to eat lunch together for that keynote that day.
Yes.
And so we got to discuss that some. She showed some prison units from other countries that were mother and child units. And we were admiring how, like, humane they looked.
Yeah.
Like, they were designed so that a child never sees bars.
Yeah.
But between that and that, the nation of Uzbekistan, if a woman is pregnant and is sentenced with a crime, she doesn't begin to serve her sentence until the baby is a year old, which all of that demanded of me to ask, why are we locking up those moms at all?
Yeah. If we can wait for 1 year, can we not wait 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Right.
Okay. Then why are we locking her up at all?
Right. If what they've done is egregious enough to be locked up, but not so egregious that they can have their child, what crime is that?
Yeah.
It's not.
Then what's the point of locking them up in the first place?
If they're not a danger to society.
Yeah.
Because if they are, then I have to assume they can't have their kid with them. It just doesn't make any sense.
We're still assuming that locking someone up fixes things.
Fixes anything.
That's still the assumption.
And that's, I mean, I'm a radical leftist. I accept the fact that not everybody agrees with me, but I'm for the wholesale abolition of prisons and the police force, right? But until that happens, can we at least stop locking up moms for kiting checks?
Yeah.
You know, can we stop locking people up for being poor?
Yeah.
You know, but she had some good insight on that, but she didn't talk to that point. And that was something I really wanted to hear about. We heard a lot about harm reduction over the course of this symposium as well. I went to one specific breakout about harm reduction. There's an organization in Tulsa called SHOTS. Are you familiar with that? They are a grassroots-led, volunteer-led organization that of harm reductionists. There are some nurses who participate. There are people who used to use drugs. It's a really non-judgmental. They exchange needles by delivery anonymously. They've got a hotline that goes to the number of two different volunteers, and they'll go and meet you at Quick Trip and exchange needles. They brought one of the kits that they give out, and that kit included a 10 or a 20 pack of clean syringes, clean cotton for filtering. I don't know if maybe our listeners don't know a lot about what goes into intravenous drug use or harm reduction.
Yeah. Explain really briefly to them when we say harm reduction, what we mean.
Harm reduction is specifically the practice and honestly the science of literally what it sounds like, reducing the risk of harm to a person who is using drugs or who is experiencing mental illness, chronic mental illness, or who's experiencing homelessness. Like, Housing First is the model we use in Oklahoma City. That is harm reduction.
Yeah. Locking up firearms in a home is harm reduction.
That's harm reduction. Yeah, absolutely. Laws about making you wear a seatbelt and have insurance for your car, that's harm reduction. Putting a legal age on buying cigarettes and alcohol, that's harm reduction. Why would we do it for those things and not as much for guns? And we just outlaw drugs? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
And Dr. Carl Hart talked about that quite a bit in his keynote. But this harm reduction crew, their kits have clean cotton. I'll get back to that. Clean syringes, clean cotton for filtering drugs. They have a tourniquet in it because a tourniquet, if you use a belt to tie off and you nod, it has no flexibility and it can cut off your circulation.
Oh.
So a rubber tourniquet has some flexibility there that a belt wouldn't. And a surgical hose wouldn't really.
Yeah.
And let's see what else. They had Narcan in the kit. They give out Narcan that's nasal spray Narcan. because anybody can use that. Like if you don't know anything about intramuscular or intravenous injections, you can still stick a nasal spray into somebody's nose. Yeah. And that's a opioid antagonist is Narcan.
Yeah.
It fits in the same receptors that opiates fit into in the brain, but it fits in there better.
Yeah.
And so it gets in and kicks the opioid out.
Yeah.
It won't counter any other drugs. So if you're having an overdose because you mixed with antihistamines or benzos or other drugs, alcohol, it won't make you sober. The alcohol will still be in your system.
But it doesn't have a negative effect.
It doesn't. Yeah. And so for users, they give them syringes, intramuscular syringes of Narcan.
Oh, wow.
So because they're familiar with how to inject somebody.
You might be wondering, if this concept is new to you, you might be wondering, why are we giving people clean needles? And and I talked about this recently with a woman from Hope Community Services. If our ultimate goal is to keep you alive, keep you safe, and keep you as healthy as relatively possible, and you're an intravenous drug user and you have an addiction to that drug, why would we not start? And you're not necessarily ready. You might have tried to get sober and it was very hard and you couldn't do it. Why don't we start with keeping you as safe as possible if you're going to use by giving you clean needles?
Right. Let's reduce the risk of HIV and AIDS and hepatitis C infections. Let's reduce the risk of overdose.
Yeah.
Let's reduce the risk of intentional or accidental overdose. I should say fentanyl has become very common cutting heroin as a filler. But it is far more concentrated than heroin, to the tune of nearly 10 times.
Yes.
And so it's, that's another thing in the kit is fentanyl test strips.
Oh,
some places, but I just think we, you know, again, maybe I'm radical, but I think we need safe consumption sites and I think we need anonymized fentanyl testing.
There are some cities, I think San Francisco has, safe injection sites.
We have like six, cities in the US. Portland has one. I actually got to visit a wet shelter and safe consumption site. It's a 5-story, like it's got wet shelter above, it's got day shelter and overnight shelter down below. And, it is a no-go place for the police. They will not interfere.
Good.
You are safe there. There's nursing staff. There's needle exchange.
I think people's when I was heads walking would explode in, if we tried to do that.
If we tried to do that here, we're not quite ready for that. We need to get that way really quickly. as I was walking up, there were two guys sitting on a bench right by the front door, sharing a crack pipe, and it was just nobody was looking at that. It's nobody's business.
Yeah.
This is a safe place for them to do that because they're going to do it.
They're going to do it anyway. So we might as well provide them a safe place with medical staff. And that if they're ready to stop using, then we can help them stop using.
Yeah. I think the last 3 years of my life have taught me, if nothing else, that somebody else's sobriety, it's just not that important to me.
Yeah.
Like if somebody's already sober and that's really important to them, then I want to encourage them and support them and help them if they need my help maintaining that. But if they're not, that is not my goal, is to get them sober. My goal is to keep them alive for as long as I can.
Yes.
And maybe they're always going to use for the rest of their life. God knows that one of my favorite people who passed away last February, he used until he died and I loved him and he was housed when he died.
Yeah.
And, and I know his last year of life, he didn't pay rent a single time and he bought crack, lots. And, and you know what? He had a good time for his last year of life and, he lived for 61 years. So he earned it, so I just don't have it left in me to have any judgment about people using substances. It just doesn't, I've got an open beer in front of me right now and that's just legal, Yeah. Anyway, it was a very good symposium. I know that you had to leave and didn't get to come to the second day. The second day was great. We got to hear some research on hope, like some scientific research on hope. And I want to just say one insight that I took away from that. That was Dr. Chan Hellman. He's at OU in Tulsa doing this research. He has a book called Hope Rising. And this is a guy who's had a rough life. He has an ACEs score of 9 out of 10 as well, but he's a head researcher.
Wow.
He experienced homelessness when he was younger. He has quite a story, but he didn't really share most of that during this. But he pointed out, and I thought this was a really good insight and one that I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life, that desperate acts are acts of hope.
Yeah. Like
he said, if I need money and I go out of here and I go break into cars to steal money, that means I believe the future can be different than, than the present is. Wow. Apathy is the loss of hope. Like when I think, well, there's nothing to be done.
Wow.
But what a great takeaway from that, that like desperation is just the sadder, darker side of hope. I really like that because that's so many people that I encounter in my life out, you know, when I'm out in the streets, you know, day to day. So I really, really enjoyed that. And, not to belabor the point, but check out Dr. Carl Hart, his book, High Cost, will change your thinking. It will challenge your thinking at the very least and probably will blow your mind. I know I saw people in that session, in that keynote, who got up to speak afterward and were just like, you just totally blew my mind and changed my entire way of approaching this. I have been wearing a moralistic hat my whole life and I didn't realize it. And I'm throwing that in the trash today and moving forward refreshed. Wow. I mean, it was really powerful. And one woman who I've encountered before in Tulsa, who's a harm reductionist, asked him a question and she said something about these disparities, these racial disparities. And he stopped her. So I just want to correct that. Disparities, that's a word that we've been used as a trick. That's a trick to convince us that it's to lighten the load of racism for the racist. He said, you prefer Marlboros. I prefer Newports. You can see that along racial lines. We both smoke, but we smoke different brands. That's a disparity. You're talking about discrimination that is institutionalized. Mm. That's not a disparity. Don't let them take the power of the words away from you. And you know what her woke ass response was? Thank you for that. Like, I'm so proud of her because she's like, she didn't like recoil or anything.
Yeah. She was
like,
she could have been embarrassed.
Yeah. She was like, thank you for educating me.
Yeah.
And then went on to ask her question and he answered and he said, and you're my hero. The people who are actually doing this, because I'm in the comfort of a lab.
Yeah.
I get to write a book and go on tours and you guys are actually on the street doing this important work. And I really appreciate that. He was great. Said some challenging stuff, sacrilegious stuff even, but, so I'm sorry that you had to miss that second day, Commissioner Blumert, sorry that you had to miss that second day. We really got some good information and I know that, you did not miss because you had some fun stuff to do. So.
No, I had to miss because I was very sick.
I'm sorry about that. Sorry in the sympathetic way, not the guilt way.
Thank you.
I had nothing to do with it.
Thank you.
I do appreciate you coming on and talking about the Zero Symposium in this bonus episode of OKC Span.
I feel very privileged to be on this podcast.
Well, I really appreciate it. And I want to encourage listeners, if you want to learn more about the Zero Mental Health Symposium presented by Mental Health Association Oklahoma, you can find their website for the Zero Mental Health Symposium online. Well, it's a website, so it's going to be online. You can find their website in the catalog. You can also, I would encourage you, if you're really interested in any of the breakout sessions that I mentioned, scroll through Tulsa Voices Twitter feed from the 3rd and 4th of October. That was when I was live tweeting from their feed and I made separate threads per session and per keynote. So it wasn't just one long thread. So you can find the beginning of each thread and see if that's a topic you want to learn about and follow along there or follow back there. And otherwise, thank you for being on this bonus episode and for hanging out with me for
so long
today. I really appreciate it. And come back sometime soon.
Okay.
And you, listener, come back immediately. If you enjoyed this bonus episode, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and write a review. Say, I listened to the bonus episode of OKC Span about mental health, featuring County Commissioner Carrie Blumer. And you know what? I'm a changed person. I'm living a new life. With the scales have fallen from my eyes, and I am a new person. And I'm going out to do likewise and educate my peers.
The old has
become new.
The old has passed away. The new has.
Yeah. You can quote the Bible. At me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Include all of that, please. Like the dialogue included in your review. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on OKC Spin bonus episode.
Bye.
Goodbye. Busy newsroom. Murmurs. Typewriter noises. Say some more stuff.
This home does not have any pets. It's hard to be here.
It's really frustrating when somebody does that, isn't it?
The weather outside is nice. It's a little overcast, but cool. It's Sunday.
Sunday.